Welcome back to Tales of Southwest Michigan's Past. This is Michael Delaware. I am your host, and I hope that you guys survived January and are enjoying your early days of February here in Michigan. And we're going to go back in time again today, and we're going to look at some factories this time of yesteryear. And I'm going to be returning to a collection of delicious stories from Benton Harbor, written by James Pender in his book called History of Benton Harbor and Tales of Village Days. And we're going to be looking at basket factories, as well as talk a little bit about canning factories and some other types of industries in that town, as well as some odd characters and a little history of the hand pump fire engines. So come along and join me. This is going to be a fun tour through history over in Berrien County. So James Pender wrote a collection of stories called A History of Benton Harbor and Tales of Village Days. And it includes a combination of local historic events, as well as it's interwoven with anecdotes of the times from the Benton Harbor Village in its early days of founding. And James Pender moved to that area as a young child and grew up in the village of Benton Harbor. And he wrote this collection of stories in 1914 and published them in 1915. So it goes back into some of the early pioneer era days of the late 1800s in the Benton Harbor area. And it's just a fun book to go through because every chapter he tells a unique aspect of Benton Harbor's history. And I've done a couple of episodes so far on these stories, and they've been pretty well received from the audience. So I thought I would venture on into another chapter here. And this one addresses the history of the Benton Harbor basket factories, as well as a lot of other stories. So we'll just get into it. The Benton Harbor basket factories, of which there were three, and they were owned by C. Colby. There was another one by Hall and Carpenter, and another one by Ingham and Leslie from 1870 to 1880 and a little bit later than that. Colby's factory was located in a building called the Red Warehouse, and it was a large one-story frame painted red and stood where the Graham and Morton Dock Warehouse has been in recent years on Water Street. Now, remember, he's writing this from the period of time of 1915. I am not super familiar with Benton Harbor. I've been there a few times, but I would defer to local historians to tell you exactly where those buildings were located. And I don't know if any of these buildings are still standing, but let's just go along with the story here. In this factory, there was some very expert basket makers, or nailers as they were called. The best of these were a few young men who had come over from Chicago with James Kirby and Brothers when that firm operated the first basket factory in Benton Harbor. Then they sold their factory to Mr. Colby, and their employees remained there and became actively identified with the industrial and social life of the new town. The nailers in the basket factory worked on piecework, and what that means is they were paid 50 cents per 100 peach baskets that they made. An ordinary nailer could make about 500 baskets per day by keeping at it continuously and working hard, but the experts could pile up many more than this number. One of them, a former Kirby employee whose associates called Chris, could put up 800 peach baskets in a day's work whenever he wished to do so. And he was a model young man and so highly esteemed by his employer and associates that they had a standing offer for a large sum as a bet that in a contest that he could put up more baskets in a day than any nailer that ever put nails from the mouth and drove them into the wood with a hammer. He was known as the champion basket maker, and he is still in the basket business at this writing. This was 1915. He was not as a nailer at that point in time, but as a wealthy member of the Anderson Tully Company. C.J. Tully is his name. Over at Hall and Carpenter's factory, which was now Hinckley's in 1915, There was the largest number of employees ever gathered in a local basket factory. It was overcrowded. The hoop-making department was under the management of Dick Perkins and his brother William, also known as Billy, and both of them were experienced nailers. The Perkins brothers were indulgent in their employees, and whenever there was a shortage of material, someone of the boys would go to the boss and say, "We're out of stuff. Can we go swimming?" And good-natured Dick would reply laughingly, "Yes." Then the swimming signal would be given, and that is two fingers held up to the view of all, and the nailers would then hasten to the canal and dive off the dock into the water. These trips to the canal were frequent, from 4 to 6 times in a day. A springboard was placed on the dock in the rear of the mill, and from this, the employees turned somersaults into the water. And it was from this swimming spot that Ben King, the poet of St. Joseph, got his inspiration for the verses entitled "The Bungtown Canal." King was one of the boys who worked at Hall and Carpenter's Mill when Dick and Billy Perkins were running the hoop and basket departments and employing all the hands that they could get. And Ben King's poem went like this. It said, "How I long to go back there with some old-time pal and dive off again in the Bungtown Canal." And that comes from Ben King's Book of Verse. Now, some of the employees were peculiar characters. There was a fellow named Charlie Stocking, whose occupation was that of a hoop maker. And he was a tall, slim youth with black eyes and hair and a wild, reckless disposition. He did not care what others thought of his tendency to swear. Whenever the hoop material would break in the process of winding up on the form, this fellow would swear a volume of oaths that could not be improved upon by a pirate. Some of the basket makers would look up from their work in alarm, but others would quietly say, "That's Stocking." Another odd character was Hosea Crandall, as was also his brother Lee. Hosea was short and broad, and Lee was tall and slim. And on all occasions when the mill crew desired extra entertainment, the Crandall brothers performed contortion feats and acrobatic stunts. They were circus performers out of the ring for a season. Two of the employees at Hall and Carpenter's Mill continued their work there many years after Hall and Carpenter sold out, and the majority of the boys had entered other occupations or immigrated to different parts of the United States. They are Henry Noe, who was an engineer, and James Brennan, who was a foreman of veneering machines. At the Ingram and Leslie factory, which was located at the site of Darch's shingle mill after the latter had burned down in 1872, now this stood where the wholesale grocery house of Kidd, Dater, and Price had been located in modern times in 1915. This factory was well known as the headquarters of the most kindly mannered man that ever lived in the town. His name was John C. Ingram, and he was regarded somewhat as a personal duplicate of Abraham Lincoln. On the other hand, the factory was presided over in the mechanical department by one of the sternest men that this town ever possessed. So strict was Mr. Leslie that no one was permitted to enter the factory until after submitting to a hostile examination at the door. Mr. Leslie would hasten to the door and confront an intruder, regardless of whether the one desiring to enter was a friend or foe. He had some fights, usually with the men who carried chips on their shoulders. Nonetheless, John W. Leslie, when away from the business, was one of the most amiable of men. All who knew him long and well in Benton Harbor regretted his decision to sell out when he did so many years ago and moved to Alabama, where timber is more easily procurable for basket making. The same kindly memories are cherished for Newton B. Hall, one of Benton Harbor's most esteemed businessmen and manufacturers in the early days of the village. Mr. Hall and his family also moved to Alabama, and Samuel Gentle immigrated to the same state to continue his basket manufacturing business. Now let's look at some other activities in the Benton Harbor Village. The first canning factory was established by A. Plummer and C. Tarbell in 1872 under the firm name of Plummer and Tarbell. This factory was located on Water Street near where the Phoenix Hotel has been in recent years. Fruit and corn were put up into cans, and this new industry gave employment to a large number of people at a time of year when other employment was closed down. The factory was moved later to Colfax Avenue below the hill. It did a good business from year to year under different proprietors. C.M. Edwick was undoubtedly the most successful canning factory man of that period. There was a select crew of the colored aristocracy employed in the steaming department of the canning factory. These dusky gents made merry at their work, and the strains of southern melodies floated over the factory during working hours. My old Kentucky home and down on the Suwannee River emanated from that section of the factory where the blacks were hidden by clouds of steam. The factory was destroyed by fire in the fall of 1886. It has been succeeded by C.H. Godfrey's Canning Works. Manufacturing cans was a local industry that followed the establishment of the original canning factory. A large number of can makers were employed by George Morton and Charles Ogden in the factory building on East Main Street, near where the Premier Bathhouse is now located. Kirby's Gristmill was located on the south bank of the canal, on the side of where W.P. Robbins Lumberyard has been located in modern times. James Kirby and Brothers were the original pioneers here in the manufacture of flour, as well as peach baskets. The people of Benton Harbor and surrounding country have been purchasing flour from the Millburg Mills and St. Joseph Flouring Mills. However, Benton Harbor flour had won wide popularity. The mill was a large square frame three-story building in height, and it was painted red. Frank Nichols was the miller. Fire broke out in the building, and the mill was entirely consumed in 1873. This fire was the largest conflagration Benton Harbor people had ever fought against with bucket brigades. The original fire company was organized after this fire. A hand-pumping fire engine was purchased by the village government. A few years later, the famous Tom Benton fire engine displaced the old-fashioned hand pumper. And now, the Tom Benton engine has been displaced by a modern motor truck firefighting equipment. Another grist mill was erected and operated by James Reeves. It was located on the west side of the Colfax Avenue opposite Bellevue Street. The miller did a good business there many years, and the mill was sold by C.F. Compton, a miller from California. Compton's grist mill also was devastated by fire, but was partly saved by the Tom Benton Fire Company. The building was later torn down. A sawmill built by John H. Graham and known as Graham's Mill was erected on the Willow Drive Road in 1870. It was located near the railroad tracks. This mill, during a period of 20 years, turned out more lumber than any other similar industry in that part of Michigan. The logs for the mill were floated down the Pawpaw River as far as the Willow Drive Road, where they were pike-poled by river by men up a canal slip to the mill. It was an interesting sight to observe the great logs going up the slide being pulled by chain with iron dogs attached, the chains getting power from machinery in the mill. The saw that transformed the logs into building material was a straight upright blade in the pioneer days of the mill. A circular saw displaced the old upright, and the output of lumber was greatly increased. Daniel Green was the head sawyer in this mill from the earliest days of its operation until it closed down and went out of business for lack of logs. And that was very much the case of that whole western coast of Michigan. The logs eventually ran out and a lot of the lumber mills disappeared and just kept moving north. The captains of industry and pioneers in enterprises are historical personages in the life of every community. Peter English promoted the original waterworks system in Benton Harbor. Edward Bront built the Hotel Benton and the first modern hotel in Benton Harbor. I.W. Conkey gave Benton Harbor its first commodious public auditorium, Conkey's Hall. George F. Soner, chief local patron of the Benton Harbor Public Library, has been connected with the Benton Harbor's interest since the year 1872. Professor George J. Edgecombe promoted the Benton Harbor College. He resigned as principal of the local public schools in 1888 to take up the college work. James W. Pearl, civil engineer, built the Britton Avenue Viaduct, a unique bridge structure of remarkable enduring qualities. He also constructed a drainage and sewer system that has given Benton Harbor a sanitary and healthful uplift. J. Stanley Morton has managed the water traffic problem so efficiently that the Graham and Morton Transportation Company has grown from the single steamboat, which was called the Messenger, in 1880, to a fleet of five Great Lakes liners. James Robinson was captain of the propeller Messenger in 1880 and later commanded some of the newer and more modern steamers of the Graham and Morton line. Captain Bert Simons, veteran commander of Palace steamers, began his lake sailing career when he gave up ball playing on the flats to become a cabin boy. And that is the story of that chapter, from everything from basket making to canning to the early fire engines, flouring mills and sawmills, as well as some of the other stories of the industry that were during that time. And it's kind of interesting to look back at that period of Benton Harbor, because you had the basket industry, which was dependent upon the peach-growing industry. And the peach-growing industry essentially ended almost abruptly because of the discovery of the disease that was killing all the peach trees in that area. And they decided to cut them all down. And killing off an orchard of peach trees and trying to start over again is not as easily as tilling corn into the soil and replanting next year and having corn again. I mean, a tree, as we all know, takes decades to get to where it's producing peaches sometimes. So that certainly was a huge setback. And of course, the loss of the peach tree industry, the peach growing industry, pretty much ended the basket making industry. The basket making industry was also dependent upon the availability of lumber and wood. And so you have two industries dying off associated with the loss of lumber in the area, as well as the loss of the orchards that were growing the peaches that were being put in baskets and used to ship peaches to other locations like Chicago and so forth. And I'm sure that impacted the canning industry as well. So it's a very fascinating look at how the culture, the dynamics of an industry in a community will change. And sometimes communities never recover from that. And sometimes they transition over into a new type of manufacturing, and others never recover. But it's always enjoyable to read through James Pender's recollections of the early days of Benton Harbor. And I know I've carried a lot of stories of Benton Harbor this year on the podcast, but I decided that going into this season that I wanted to carry more stories from the Berrien County area as well as St. Joseph. And so I've done quite a number of stories in St. Joseph, like three different cities this year, as well as doing some more stories here in the Benton Harbor area. And I'll probably carry more stories of the James Pender book until I've run out of all the stories, because his recollections are quite fun to look back at. But if you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to leave a rating or review on whatever app that you are listening on. And if you'd like to reach out to me, you can find me at michaeldelaware.com. I'm about 1 month away from the release of my book, Victorian Southwest Michigan True Crime. Really excited about that. Been working really hard on getting all my presentation materials ready, and I'm hoping I'll be all squared away by the time I start going out there doing book talking tours. So if you want to find out my calendar of the book schedule, you can go to michaeldelaware.com and click on the calendar link at the top, and you'll see all the dates and places that I will be speaking at and selling books, and I'll be having signed books there if you want. And also, if you want to pre-order the book, I will personally sign the book and send it to you as soon as my shipment comes in. So you can do that at michaeldelaware.com. So hopefully you guys will read the book and tell others about it. It always helps me to have other people talking about this podcast, as well as the work that I'm doing on trying to preserve some history. True crime is just one way to do it. So if you see any postings on social media, feel free to share that with other people. And you can also follow me at Michael Delaware Author on Facebook. And on Instagram, I am Michigan History Guy. And I just started my Instagram account this year. So hopefully you guys will follow me on social media if you are out there on social media. And until next time, when we take another journey into yesterday and explore even more fascinating tales of Southwest Michigan's past. Thank you for listening.